Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, I got distracted as there was a semi-urgent message coming up. So secondarily, it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if we have any of those, if you have any of those you would be willing to share with us, we would appreciate it. You can do that by calling 563-999-3581 and pressing 1 on your phone. And or you can send an email, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or question from you from the email, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it just makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service. And that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you, how we can support you, and what might be of most use to you moving forward. Yesterday, we were not on Blog Talk Radio, but we were broadcasting through Podbean because Blog Talk had yet again more difficulties and the whole system was shut down, at least as far as any access we could manage. So thank you for being here, and I believe Jeannie has made it available so the archive from yesterday would be available through their website and or the Blog Talk Radio listing. And we'll just continue to carry on, hoping that there's something of value that we can contribute to the flow here. As I've been working through the Way of Mastery, I've taken a few detours to highlight the similarities I'm finding between the teachings that Anthony DeMello gives in his book Awareness and the same kinds of observations and exercises that are offered in the Way of Mastery. And I did also mention that if you're interested in the Way of Mastery and or the book Awareness by Anthony DeMello, I just wanted to highlight for people that they recently came out with an audible version of the book by Anthony DeMello. And I just like people to know that it is not the same as the paperback or the Kindle version. And it makes it a challenge for me to try and compare the notes. We were listening to a Guy Finley lecture last night, and I told the people in the support group that if the Kindle version of Awareness by Anthony DeMello was the same as the Audible version, I would have stopped Guy Finley's lecture 5 or 6 times and just read a section where it's almost identical observations and almost an identical set of invitations for us to choose to live our lives differently. Area code 541, you're in the air. Area code 541. I have turned on the microphone.
Yes.
If you're there, it is not registering.
I am here. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Welcome.
Wonderful. I just put my hand up because I had mentioned last night in the support group that I would like to do a worksheet with you. So anytime you're ready is fine with me. I will just wait.
Well, the old adage says there's no time like the present.
Okay.
So how can we support you in a worksheet process?
Well, I did a worksheet, and I would the worksheet that I would like you to do with me, and I did it all, and I wanted to go through it with you if possible for your input. And any insights you might have.
Okay.
Okay, so go ahead.
I was going to ask what version of the worksheet you're using.
I think I'm using Michael Rice's new short form, but I'm not sure. The one that is a 7-step, and I think it might be the short form or the newest 7-step. They're both very similar.
Well, if you look at the bottom of your worksheet process, it'll have on there a version and a date, usually on the last
version
line in small print.
Version 01, backslash 2023-2.
Okay, so you're looking at something that was revised last year. So is it a full 7-step worksheet process?
Yeah, it looks like it.
The page is just completely packed with words?
Yes.
An 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper? Okay. So go ahead and start off what either reading, working through it, or telling me what you have filled in if you've already done the worksheet.
Okay. I like to put my physical symptoms down and my pain level. So I'll start with those. The before pain level is a 7 or 8, I would think, by the amount of shaking that I tend to do when I get really nervous. And my physical symptom is the shaking. It will either be mostly my left arm, or it will be my whole body will kind of vibrate. Okay, so that starts that. So 1A is, I, Celinda, who am love, am experiencing fear. My denial, I forgot to put my initials in, displaces my experience of myself as my essence, love, and my mind tells me that my emotions are caused by my trigger, which is my mother. It's actually any person I perceive as a power person dynamic, or any dynamic I get in, but I'm going to put my mother specifically. My perception, is that good?
You put your mother in as 1C.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
My perception
is what?
I will be hurt and rejected. Okay. And number D, the truth is only my thoughts cause my emotional upset. I have to circle breathe, Dr. Tim, always. Okay.
All right, so come back to 1B. What is the emotion you have in this?
Fear.
So you have fear in this, and you said your perception is that you will be hurt?
And
can
rejected.
You read that again? What did you put? Okay,
that's your perception. Will.
That's also a thought. So you're using a different thought for the 1D?
Let me see. 1D is, yes, I am using a different thought.
What is the thought you think you're using to generate
it
fear
is,
that's different than I will be hurt and rejected?
It is unsafe to speak my own feelings and truth.
Okay, keep going.
I want to punish 1C by either attacking or withdrawing, and myself by withholding my truth or appeasing. Number 3, my desire, the constructive result, the exact goal that drives and uncovers my pain, is that I want 1C, my trigger, my mother, to allow me to express my feelings and truth so that I can feel safe to be me. Number 4, I choose love, my essence, which stirs the love in everyone involved. And number 5A, one upset my perception, my mind's construct is built out of, I put false data because corrupt for me from my family's definition is a real trigger word. So I put in false data driven by my goal. Number 3, which is my goal. Okay. By canceling that goal, the driver that selects the data that produces my reality, my errant perception, I don't have any problem with error, collapses, and I get to drop into the parts of my mind hidden from me by my pretense that others are responsible for what I have created again. If they are the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Action step. While holding love conscious, active, and present, Rahma, I now choose to collapse my mind's lies by willingly canceling my goal or driver for 1C from my mother to allow me to express my feelings and truth, and I cancel my need to from 3B, my need to feel safe to be me. I invite Rucha to incline me towards healing, restore me to my newborn essence of love, heal my denial and capacity to generate my emotion of fear. Help me open a direct conscious relationship with and gently remove the denied, dissociated, and projected parts of my mind. C, I cancel my need to be right and to make up another story out of my hidden false data to hallucinate proof that my fear, hostility-based story, my reality is true. I breathe and soften. Okay, 6A. I now feel the desire to be shown more and to open my heart. And D, about number one, see that I have more to learn about being the conscious, active presence of love towards myself and others. Number 7A, a principle of the universe is that by giving, I first get the original. I am grateful for this opportunity to heal. I choose truth and perfect love. Mother, I structure a goal towards you and offer to you my allowing of and listening for your feelings and truth by using two more tools in my little toolbox. I breathe the love, I cleanse and bathe in oxygen. I cleanse by opening all of my cells and bathe in oxygen. Have I not done this for others, which is, have I not allowed others to express their feelings and truth? And what I'm learning is I always have not done this for others in one form or another. I commit to love, to living a human life. To help achieve this, I do a mass canceling of all the times I wanted number 3 from anyone. And I put my initials there. And I have some other thoughts that I wrote down, but I wanted to ask how that flowed.
Well, it flows. I didn't understand if you said it, where you talked about a shift that you got or an insight that you got from it.
Okay, this desire to learn more, that was my insight, that I really don't know. And I asked to be shown and how to open my heart. Because I'm totally reevaluating what allowing means and what responsibility and accountability mean and what the difference is between being a teacher which I'm coming to perceive as a trainer as opposed to an educator, and to the desire to be a perpetual learner of life's ways. And I'm just in a real place of unknowing and transition, I feel like, and there's a lot of confusion around it. There's a lot of clarity, and there's a lot of resistance.
A lot of confusion and a lot of clarity.
Yeah, both.
Those are the two things you said right in a row.
Right.
So the first comment I would have for you is that you are thoroughly stuck in the intellect trying to figure it out. And so, you know, that's going to be the challenge for any of us that are, you know, at the average or above average intelligence in the Western culture, because we've been so thoroughly trained that the intellect is going to have the answers and we're going to be able to think our way to the answer we need, and it will all make logical sense. If we track the logic down, that's going to find, you know, the pot of gold at the end of that logical trail, and it's just never the truth. So I would suggest that in this process, you work to put the intellect on the shelf more often, sooner and more often, and you allow yourself to get more into the breath and to quit worrying about the definition of these words and whether or not you're a trainer or a teacher or a student or whatever, and just use the tool. I would also suggest that in this particular worksheet, the goal that you chose is somewhat watered down from what might be more productive, more meaty. So you say the emotion in the worksheet is fear, and your reality is that I will be hurt and rejected by my mother. And I would offer that that is more in line with the feeling that's or the thought that's generating the emotion of fear. And that this thought that you put in here is just intellectual spinning about why you're feeling the fear. It's going to be unsafe to speak my feelings in truth. That's kind of a projection about what might happen. But your experience from your mother is that you have been hurt and rejected.
Okay.
And so if you switch that up in your next worksheet and you put, you know, that, you know, my mother hurt me and rejected me, and my thought is I will be hurt and rejected by her. Now you craft a goal that's the opposite of her hurting you and rejecting you. And it would be more in line with, my goal is for my mother to embrace me lovingly and to accept me and welcome my thoughts and feelings. It's going
to
be meatier. It's going to resonate more with deep emotion. And it's going to stir up, when you cancel that goal, it's going to resonate and stir up a different part of your mind.
Okay,
and if you combine if you combine that with stepping out of the intellectual stuff, really practicing.
Okay, I'd like you to restate that goal for me. So my mother, putting it in present tense rather than the future. Maybe that's a clue for me. If I'm in the future or the past, I'm in my head. If I'm in the present, I'm in what I'm feeling. Okay. Okay, the goal would be then, if my mother hurt and rejected me,
I want my mother to love and accept me, protect me, and embrace my thoughts or feelings. Anything that's got more emotional meat to it.
This is real foreign territory for me. Feelings. I don't want to go there. I've lost it already. I need.
Okay. Okay. So here
I don't have a handle on
just,
it. So what is
this
the goal?
Is just a general teaching for the worksheet process, the way I do it. It's not the only way to do
right.
it. It may not be the best way to do it, but the way I do it is I assume, and I keep coming back to the idea, that whatever thought I'm using to generate my negative emotion, that thought in itself contains a goal that is not getting met. So when I craft the goal, I want to stay as close to the thought I'm using that generates my negative emotion as is possible. So when I say my thought is, my mother has hurt and rejected me, my goal will be for my mother to accept me and nurture me and support me. It's going to have the opposite of rejecting is accepting. It's going to have the opposite of hurting is nurturing and supporting. And so I just want to keep it very simple, and I want to make sure I line these things up. The emotion I'm creating is lined up with what my mind is telling me the outside events are that's happening, and if that's lined up with the thought I'm using to create that emotion. And that lines up. Then the goal has to line up so well that if this goal, this fantasy utopian goal, if it were true and had been true and is true, then there would be no need for this worksheet process. My emotion wouldn't be generated because I wouldn't be pouring my mind energy into the specific thought pattern, because this thing that my mind is telling me happened would never have happened. So I want all of this to line up as simply as possible, resonating the same energy as the words that I'm using in my thoughts to create the negative emotion.
Good. So let's go back to 1C and 1B, and I do this again. So I've written down 1C, my mother has hurt and rejected me. Is that correct, my perception?
Well, that's what you're saying, right? I'm suggesting that that's the thought that you use in number 9. And
okay.
In number 1C, or number 9, in D, the thought, and in 1C, that you put just a specific memory of a time where your experience was she hurt you or rejected you.
I only have the memory that my mother told me about. I have no real
which
memory.
Which is what?
That when I was 2, I had my first and only temper tantrum because she spanked
leg. There you go. Stop. You
okay.
Told that before, you're right on it. So I would just put here, and the part of this worksheet, 1C is the object of attention. In this case, it's clearly your mother. And then there's a
right.
comma, and there's a space to write something. On this worksheet, all I want to put in there is a very simple kind of a bookmark to remind me what this particular worksheet was about. So I would just say, mother, you know, beat me or spanked me when I was 2. And you're going to know what that is. That's all. This is only for your reference, for if you're ending up doing, you know, 20 or 30 different worksheets on your mother, this is just going to be the one, okay, this is about that. So you don't have to get any detail in there. And then what you put in here, that she hurt you and rejected you, that becomes your thought that's generating fear.
My mother
and you might
hurt
say,
and
you know,
rejected
she,
me? Past tense?
Yes.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Because you're tagging it to that memory. And
okay.
You might say, my mother hurt and rejected me when I spoke up or when I spoke my truth.
Or when I tried to hit her. That's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing I tried to hit her.
Okay, but it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter, right? to begin with, because you can do dozens of worksheets on this over time. And all we're trying to do right now is give you a general set of rules to apply to any worksheet you do, which will make them a little bit more effective, because you'll start resonating the energies better because it's all going to line up.
So my mother hurt and rejected me when I pulled a temper tantrum for 1B?
It could be. Well, for 1B, no.
Yeah.
For 1B, the thought, yes, perhaps. So let me pull up a different worksheet here, because you're clearly, you're saying 1B. You're working on a slightly different worksheet. So I'm Linda, who I'm love, your emotion is fear, and then 1C, mother, and the perception is, okay, that she spanked me when I was 2. And your thoughts caused my emotional upset. The thought, use a separate worksheet for each. Okay, and so the thought is what we just said, that, my mother hurt and rejected me when I spoke up. Or here you can say, if you have this memory, this reported memory you're working on, you can say, when I hit her.
Okay. Yeah, when I had a temper tantrum is what I specifically remember.
And then you've got the punishment thoughts. They're all right, and they stay there. And then the willingness to process out all the disease-producing energies. And then the goal in 3 would be the opposite of her hurting and rejecting you. I want my mother to love me, nurture me, support me, and listen to me. Anything like that, that's more in line with the opposite of hurting and rejecting you.
So that I can
What's your impulse? Well, what's your impulse there? So you can what?
My
what did you write
is,
already?
Yeah, I want to be loved and be safe.
Well, that's
I
what we have
safe.
In the first one. Okay. So then, so that I can feel safe expressing my truth.
That's it.
So I can feel safe speaking up. That's what you can put there in 3B.
Okay. All right. I like speaking up better than expressing my truth. Okay. Okay, so action step. We'd have to redo that one according to 3A and B. I'll write that in.
Wait a minute, please. When you say you have to redo an action step, what do you mean?
Well, the action step is canceling my goal down here. I want to cancel my goal down here, so I would like to write it exactly the same way as I have it up here now.
Okay, that's the second action step. The first action step that comes right after that is in 4. And when I'm doing these on a support group or on the internet show, I ask people to go into a meditation where they think about the most loving memory, the most safe, happy, solid, contented memory they have from any time in their life, recent or distant past, and breathe into it until they feel a shift in their heart space. That's 4. That's 4. Period, action step.
And that's my grandmother.
That's what I thought you were referring to.
That's what
I thought you were referring to when you said action step. And again, the best way to get good results from this is start this on your own, redo this, clear the space for you to do these little meditations in 4. And do the meditation with the forgiveness pattern in 5 after you've canceled the goal and asked to be shown the hidden part of your mind and asked Ruka to help you with restoring your awareness to your newborn essence as love, etc. And then I would guide you through the forgiveness pattern, which just gently repeats, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need for anyone or anything to change, including myself. I specifically cancel the goal in this worksheet. I put my conscious, logical mind on the shelf. And for someone like you who gets so stuck in trying to figure it out, that would be a phrase in the forgiveness pattern that I repeat over and over and over again. I put my conscious, logical mind on the shelf. I take time out from trying to figure it out. And I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind, not intellectually shown, emotionally, viscerally shown. And then I just breathe and soften and put myself in this most open, allowing space so I can trust that it's safe to let stuff bubble up. It's safe for me to see the visceral energies, the trauma energies, the emotional energies, the memories from the past. As Guy Finley says, there's no such thing as bad self-knowledge. And I want to coach myself into that space of softening and allowing and being open. That's the point of the forgiveness pattern. So I would go back and give yourself the space to redo this from the beginning, starting with that, asking to be shown how to put your conscious, logical mind aside and redoing this set of the forms, and then this focusing on the loving energy in step four until you feel it shift in your heart space before you move on to cancel the goal. And then really get into that open allowing space that the forgiveness pattern invites you into. And then give yourself some time to write about what comes up. Making the notes, if you have memories from the past, even if they've come up a dozen or more times in the past, just review them and look for slight differences that might be there, a different sight or sound or smell or physical sensation than was obvious the last umpteen times you hit that memory. And give yourself permission to make those notations before you move on to taking a deep breath, scanning your body, and writing in number 1C what you now, or 6A what you now feel. Is making sense?
Yep. It's probably the most challenging to allow myself to feel and look, because that makes me wrong.
Okay. So I would make a note as you breathe and soften. Just breathe and soften and let the emotions come up and make a note. Just scribble it on a sheet of paper or the back of the current worksheet. If I soften and breathe, if I feel it makes me wrong, just breathe into that. There's a boatload of good stuff in there for you. We don't even need to figure out what that means. Just write it down. Make sure that you have the energy flowing. The tears are there, and you just make the observation. Just as you said it, if I let myself slow down and feel, it makes me wrong. And that can be another worksheet, or that can be turned into a mind shifter for, you know, a chunk of time where you let yourself journal about that. And you would turn the opposite of that statement into a mind shifter and let yourself breathe and soften. And the mind shifter might be, it's safe and healing for me to soften and allow and feel all of my emotions fully. Or you might say, it's safe and healing for me to soften and allow and feel and express all of my emotions fully. And give yourself an hour or more to write about what wants to answer that observation in you. Are you breathing?
I doubt it.
Okay, what's happening with the emotions?
It's too dangerous to go there.
Okay, so just breathe and soften. That's the first thing that you would write on the right side of the paper in your mind shifter. It is too dangerous to go there. Just keep breathing and feel the energy that's within you that comes along with that thought, it's too dangerous to go there. You're safe. You're here. You're an adult. You're on the phone, on the internet show. It's completely safe to have any thought or emotion. And this energy that just welled up in you with the thought it's not safe to go there is old stuff. And as Guy Finley tells us over and over again, it's completely safe to go back to anything that you've already lived through. There is no such thing as bad self-knowledge. So just recognize this is a very young, wounded part of you that's holding the energy that says it's not safe. And keep one part of you grounded in the reality that you're an adult and that you're competent and that you're learning these tools, and letting the other part of you fully feel that younger part that's holding the conclusion that this isn't safe. And just breathe. And notice what the next thing is that comes up.
Well, how identified I am with being right, because if I'm right, I'm safe.
That would be the next thing you write in the mind shifter on the right side of the piece of paper. And as soon as you've written that, then you breathe and you soften and you notice what's the next thought that comes, or the next physical sensation. When you're doing a mind shifter, it's quite highly advisable to just make a note, oh, my right shoulder just started shaking. That's every bit as viable as writing down a thought or an emotion.
I'm perspiring heavily, which is about the only time I perspire heavily is when I'm anxious, afraid, and or doing really heavy, intense physical work. That's about the only time. Or it's extremely hot. Otherwise, I do not perspire.
Okay, but that's what you would write in the mind shifter. The next thing, I'm now perspiring heavily. And then you take a breath, and you'd soften. And you'd notice what's next, what next bubbles into your awareness. And you sit with the absolute knowledge that it's perfectly safe to let these energies bubble up, whether they come up as a thought or an emotion or a memory from the past or a physical sensation or, you know, a sense of a different kind of a smell all of a sudden hits your nostrils. Just write it down, and now you're in the process of what Michael calls the mind shifter. Now you're allowing the process of what others might call targeted journaling, free association, tapping into the unconscious, with full willingness to see whatever's there and record it. So what's happening now? How's your breath?
My breath is always constricted unless I consciously breathe.
So does that mean that in this moment your breath was constricted?
Yes. It's always.
Okay. Notice how you didn't, listen, please notice how you didn't just answer my question. You went into some thought process. And you went out of the present moment and you said, my breath is always. Well, that's a lie that your mind is telling you. Your breath can't be always. What's happening right now? That was the question. If you can keep your response to that, you're in the moment. If you can notice that your responses go out of the moment, you were just saying this earlier in this very process, then you've pulled yourself out of your processing. And that's perfectly okay. It's a good thing to notice. Take a breath and get centered again. And then the more you practice observing how tricky your mind is at getting you back into the figure-it-out mode, into the intellectual mode, the more you practice that, the easier it gets for you to notice it. And eventually you'll start noticing it before somebody else points it out to you. So just breathe. Make a note. What's happening? What do you get now?
Oh, a subtle energy moving in my body. That's kind of like a subterranean tremor.
That would be the next thing you write on the right side of the page. And just breathe. And in this way, you invite yourself to continue demonstrating to yourself the truth that it is safe and healing for you to fully feel and express all of your emotions and reactions, despite the fact that your brain keeps telling you it's too dangerous. Can you see how that works? You've just reported to us and perhaps even written down three or four things that you're feeling, and you're still here. You didn't get obliterated, and no one came and attacked you. And your life experience now contradicts the traumatic false beliefs that you've downloaded from when you were younger. And that's how you start to usher yourself into an entirely new experience with both the worksheet process and the Mind Shifter tool.
That is very slippery and elusive feeling. To even catch a hold of it. It's like trying to catch a fish in the water.
Right. And that's your intellectual mind now assessing it. So breathe and soften and say, oh, good, I just caught myself again going into thought and pulling myself out of the process. And then you take a breath and you scan your body and notice what you're feeling and you write that down. And then you go back and you rewrite the Mind Shifter And then you take a breath and you scan your body and notice what wants to come up then.
And I've already lost the mind shifter. What is the mind shifter I'm doing?
Well, I'm going to recommend that you go back and listen to the archive to get the actual, because it might have shifted a few times since I first offered it. But the essence of it is, it's safe and healing for me to fully feel and express my thoughts and emotions. And you'll have a better angle on it when you go back and listen to the archive, because there was something that happened where as you said a phrase, you were choking up with emotion. And there'll be some words in there to put in your mind shifter that will really resonate deeply, because they resonated such emotion when you said it. Something about it's not safe for me to feel. You may remember that part of the conversation.
Yes.
You may not be able to come up with the exact phrase, but that's why the archive is such a good idea to go back and listen to that. And if you're like most of us, if you do this on your computer and you download the archive, you can fast forward to this part. You don't have to listen to my intro and all that stuff. You can go right to the beginning of our processing and then, you know, have your pen there to write it down. Make sense?
Yes. What's coming up is that I have chosen to structure my life in such a way that my ability to find time and solitude and space is very, very challenging.
Okay, so breathe into that. And that would be another wonderful thing to put in your mind shifter on the right-hand side. I have structured my life so much to such a degree that it's very challenging for me to find the time to have solitude and work on myself. Just write that down, or as you go back and listen to the archives, write it down.
Yes, I've made choices that have pretty much bound me in a corner.
That would be the next thing you write, and notice the emotions that you have, and just breathe. Because if you've made the choices, and you write this down, this is the benefit of writing it down when it comes to a mind shifter, then it doesn't get to slip away. And when you write that down, now you've got the actual written thing that's the truth, that's different than the first way you said it. In the second way you said it, I have made choices. And inherent in that accurate observation is the truth that you can choose again, as Diedrich Wolzak would call you to. In the next moment, you can choose to structure your life differently and create the space for the solitude, for the personal work. So just breathe and soften. And if you want, we've got enough time to do one or two more cycles of, okay, now I've just pretended I've written that down. Now what do I get? As you breathe and soften, what do you feel next?
What I feel next is, how do I make different choices that honors me and the other?
That's not a feeling. What are you breathing and softening and getting into with the tears? What's the feeling with those tears? Breathe. Try to answer this from a feeling state. What is the feeling, the emotion behind those tears?
My desire to support both myself and others.
Okay, breathe and soften. Now you're into your intellect. I'm going to suggest that what you'll find is that there's a fear you're generating that you're not going to be able to do it differently, and that that's what was behind the tears, that you were generating a fear that you're not going to be able to structure your life differently. And you can try that out, just a guess on my part. But watch the thoughts, because they are your trap, right? As we talk about in the bottom line observations, my greatest strengths will at times be my greatest weaknesses, my greatest assets at times my greatest liabilities. You have an above average intellect, and that's wonderful. It can help you solve a math problem. It can help you navigate when a bridge is down, find another route to your destination. But in the realm of your emotions, in the realm of your spiritual growth, it is your greatest liability. Practice putting it on the shelf. Oh, I just noticed a fear that maybe I won't be able to change this. Breathe and soften. Write that down. Here I have fear. Here I have tears. Breathe and soften. And now scan your body again and notice what's coming up now. One more time. Breathe and scan your body and tell me, what are you feeling now?
I am feeling locked down.
Okay, so tight, tense, locked down. And you can define lockdown any way you want, but make a note about that. And keep your breath going. And we're at the end of our time, so I'll just thank you so much for your willingness to process and suggest that you commit for yourself, whenever you're ready, to go back and listen to the second part of this archive and make notes. And then find a way to craft that hour or more to actually sit with that mind shifter and see what it reveals for you. Knowing that it is perfectly safe for you to explore this deeply and to see whatever bubbles up. And just keep repeating that mantra. It is perfectly safe for me to see and remember everything I've already lived through. All right.
Thank you.
You're most welcome and deserving. Thank you. I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. And I'll turn on the microphone for and welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of radio. And today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. And for those who may have not gotten the notice, I attempted to send out text to the ones that are on there regularly, letting them know that Blog Talk wasn't working yesterday. But just so that you know, and I put it in the link for the radio show. I'm trying to flip over at the same time I'm talking. I don't always multitask very well. Anyway, in the notes for yesterday, I put in the link for when we sent out a newsletter in January. After Blog Talk kept us shut down for about 12 days, then we decided we needed something as a backup in case that happened again. And so we sent out a newsletter with step-by-step instructions of how to download Podbean to your phone. It's an app, so you're not actually dialing in and using cell phone minutes or anything. And it worked pretty good yesterday, and that's what we actually did. So if you go to the website under the archives, you'll see I've got in big bold letters Podbean over there where it says listener download, because that's the only place that you can pick up that recording now for yesterday. But there are instructions, and I put the link to it in the notes for yesterday as well. And I made sure that it was on the website under the radio show as a backup. But just so you know, go ahead and have it downloaded and be linked to if you click that you're following Mindshifters Radio. Now, it is a podcast or a pod, what do you call it? Like a pod program. And so when you type in Mindshifters Radio, it's going to come up with mine and Michael's picture, which is actually Blog Talks podcast, and then it'll come up with the glowing heart, which is Podbean's podcast. And if you click on that glowing heart and then click that you want to follow, what happens if we Blog Talks down and we have to go live on Podbean, it will actually send you a text or an email telling you that it's live. Or if you click on the Podbean app on your phone, it'll show if we have a live show going. All you have to do is click on it and you can listen. And then there's at the bottom a little icon that looks like a phone. And if you click that, then it lets me know that you want to talk. And I'm running the switchboard just like I am with Blog Talk. And I can turn you on and you can talk to Michael or Dr. Tim. And so it worked pretty good yesterday. We had a few, you know, testing of microphones and things like that. But overall, I thought it went well. And there were 10 people that actually got in. Don't know that they all stayed in the whole time, but so I was pleased with it. So that is a backup if you ever try to dial into Blog Talk and you get a fast busy or it doesn't do anything at all, then flip over and open up Podbean and you can get right back on the show. So anyway, that's my commercial for the day. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And perhaps, you know, if there's anyone else that is on, but like we had notified a few people that are regulars, and that's where the folks came on from yesterday. But if you want to send Jeannie an email, Jeannie at whyagain.org, and give her your number and let her know that you'd like to be notified if we have to switch to Podbean, then you know, we'll start a text list. And anytime there's a problem with Blog Talk, if we have another one, we'll let you know so you can join the show too instead of miss it. Bunch of people did. So welcome. Delighted you're here. Rock and roll, all things moving forward. And I know that I was in a conversation yesterday with Celinda. And so, Miss Celinda, are you there? And you had texted me you wanted to continue that conversation. So if you want to pick it up, we're ready to rock and roll.
I turned on her microphone. She's on.
Hey, young lady, welcome. Hello, hello. Well, maybe Celinda's gone silent. Are you mute challenged, Celinda?
Hello, I'm here.
There she is. Hey, young lady, welcome. So how are you this afternoon? Morning for you out there. Way out in the western part of the world.
I'm recovering from a worksheet with Dr. Tim.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm not quite ready to talk at the moment.
Okay.
And
we can let it go.
Hold me in your thoughts, maybe tomorrow.
Extending love in your direction, for sure.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate
blessings.
Both of
you. And with you just breathing away, inviting Rooka and whatever's moving. Bet it moves.
It waters sometimes, but that's okay.
For sure. Well, you know, one of the things to understand in the healing process is that whatever the energy looked like, felt like on the way in, When you choose to do the work to reverse it on the way out, it's going to be identical. The only thing that determines how traumatic it is the amount of resistance to letting the energy move. If I go into resistance, I can take a trauma event that I'm working on that took 2 minutes to develop, and I can still be doing it years later if I'm in resistance. And if I'm in willingness, I can take something that took 10 years to develop and, bang, be through it in 2 minutes. So the willingness level, you know, and then add the breath. The breath is my offering from a physics point of view, with a physics background, is that the way you create a superconductor state within yourself so that there is zero resistance left to the movement of energies that need to move is by the breath. And that's, of course, the still point process. So,
sweet words of encouragement. Thank you so much.
We're here holding the space. All right. Well, Ms. Janita, do we have anybody else? We'll be breathing with you. Absolutely. It is, you know, in 43, 44, 45 years of breathing people, there is no trauma. And I'm talking about people in the most extreme states of trauma. I mean, people in physically attacked, people facing, you know, literal catastrophic illness. And breathe, and the breath knows how to handle it, knows how to move the energy. So keys, and of course, we can give all kinds of theories in physics as to why that works, but I think the ancient scriptures explain it best. It doesn't say that the Creator sent out His Spirit. It said the Creator sent out His breath. And the whole breath, the Holy Spirit, moves the energy, most amazingly. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet. So,
all
go
quiet.
For it.
Okay. So, let's see. We were on the page 94 in the dictionary of the Enlightenment book. And we're looking, the next word we're going to look at is right about smack in the middle of the page, is a plural noun, shedi. And this, we're going to refer back to page 75 in the manuscript or in the book to really get what this means, because it can be misleading. So the term is allied with divani from Matthew 8:28, demons. But whereas Deva is essentially elemental, Shedi appears to describe a whole mind controlled by a Deva. So then we need to go back and look at this word Divani. If you go to page 75, you'll find it on the left-hand side, a little almost down two-thirds away on the page. So what we're told is that that word is a noun, and you have to be really careful with this one. The carnate, finite entity representing an evil idea. Now, you know, the Greeks took it and they turned it into all kinds of scary creatures, and we have people running around that the demons are going to get them. And yes, in the Aramaic they talk about casting out demons, but let's see what it is. Representing an evil idea created by man. And remember, the word evil is an archery term, relates to the word sin. Sin, when you fired your arrow at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell sin. That would be how he would inform you you've not gotten the bullseye. And if you missed the target altogether, then the scorekeeper would yell out evil. So off the target altogether. So this idea is in conflict with the divine design. How could we say that simply? It goes against love. It is a disharmonious energy, an incoherent energy that does not support love staying in its integrated form. You know, when you get to the physics idea that there's only one thing in the universe, and that's energy, and that energy is eternal, can neither be created nor destroyed, then you realize the only thing that can happen is the form of the energy can change. So we have this physiological form. It's eternal. There is absolutely no question about that. But is it eternal in this form? Are the component energetic dynamics of it eternal? Yes. Are they going to stay in this form? Well, it depends how much disintegrative energy, and you look at this, again, this definition, an evil idea created by man, an energy that's off the mark for the human system, not some evil, you know, horrific creature that's out to get us. That's more of the projection. That's more of the blame game. The devil made me do it. Satan. Satan is it. Well, again, let's go back. Satan means in Aramaic, the resistor, one who misleads. It always comes back home. If you go to the Aramaic, if you go to the Greek, it always goes out there. We have this person that's a grand punisher. And what do they imagine? The creator is a grand punisher. So when I take responsibility, then I recognize that if I hold disintegrative energy, then I'm going to experience in my physiology. If I hold an energy that's incoherent, let's say, for the structure of my liver, then I'm going to have liver disease. And it will be caused by a demon. What is this? A carnate, that is something in your physiology, finite entity representing an evil idea created by man, which is in conflict with the active presence of love, we could say, as opposed to divine design. The evil entity represented by Divan, apparently capable of fixing or setting in a mind so firmly as to control in whole or part its attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. I remember back, I was living in Atlanta. This was before my son was born. He's 43. That's 44 years ago, probably. I'd started teaching, and there was a group of women who had a club of some kind, and they invited me to come and speak. So I did. And after I did my presentation, I said thank you and kind of hung around for a little while, and there were a lot of kind of like snarky, gossipy kinds of conversations going on. It's like, enough. I don't really need to do this. So I said my goodbyes and left. A short time later, I don't really remember now how long it was, but a short time later, I get contact from one of these people. I'd gotten home, and my phone rings, and I say, oh, you've got to come back. You need to help. There's something wrong. Something's got a hold of one of the women. Okay, so I went back, and the two women who'd been having this kind of nasty, gossipy conversation were sort of, it's almost like they were joined at the hip in the conversation, the nastiness of it. And one of them was choking. And they had created such an energy field between them of negativity that it was like someone or something had her physically by the throat. Now, I had no idea what to do with that, but I went into the room, and I mean, this woman's being choked, and my inclination was just to go into a really clear, connected space and deny that this thing had any power, and instantly, the grip was loosened. They had created an energy, and it fits perfectly with this incarnate, that our energy became functional in her physiology, and she was choking over it. And so someone who's possessed by a demon, what is it? What happens? An energy that's off the mark, idea created by man in conflict with love that settles into a mind so firmly as to control in whole or part its attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. And my offering is that it's time for each human being on earth to start to be willing or to step into ever-increasing levels of willingness to embrace any form of mind energy that is out of harmony with love, that is resonant within themselves, that is incoherent relative to the tissue structure, therefore destructive to it, to embrace that energy in love and remove it from the structure. It's time for us to start to move in that direction. So that gives us a clearer idea of what this idea of Satan is. And you remember that when this work was done back in the 70s, it was 25 of the world's top Aramaicists that worked on the project of developing this dictionary. And the major focal point was to establish as closely as possible the first century meaning of the words of the text. So we're talking here about an elemental force that when we assemble that energy and impact literally everything in the human realm. Time for us to wake up. Shlama. Name, output, anything produced by a person. The doctrines of a teacher, the teachings, true teachings, truth. And so this idea of the product of one's life would be referred to as shlama. And so we see different references through John and Matthew, his teachings through me, truth. Shmea, dishmea speaks of, in the Greek language, heaven, sky, but in Aramaic, there's no implication of sky, but that's the metaphor that it's used for. And more properly, if we talk about Dishmea, the kingdom of heaven, we'd be talking about the community of love. Shultana, authority, executive authority. And Shaka, the lamp, light. You are the light of the world. Yeshua, it's interesting, in Aramaic, the exact same words were used except for the pronoun. He spoke of himself as the light of the world, and then he pointed to those around him. You are the light of the world. Should you choose to give up everything of that elemental force that is of a disintegrative nature, then there's nothing in you that can inhibit the light. Remember, he talked about, you know, who lights a candle and puts it under a bushel basket? Yet a lot of people, their light is hidden by the hostilities and fears of the non-being mind. Time to open up. Shrara is truth, and it goes through a variety with suffixes and prefixes of, through John, of a complete truth, absolute truth, your truth. Sibiana, will. So this would be a word that describes the faculty of the human nafsha, the human created being. The executive authority of the mind with which one controls attitudes, goals, and cue controls. And to develop will as spiritual faculty, you know, if you go into our workshop, Getting the Stress You Need, we talk about will as the way that the mind is controlled. And the mind is controlled indirectly through goals. And since rarely have people been taught, at least as far as I'm aware, to cancel their goals, the only way that a goal can be removed from mind is by either achieving it or canceling it. And so most people have, who knows, thousands, perhaps millions of goals in their minds. Circumstances resonate and activate those goals, and people go for it. And when people function out of goals held in carbon-based memory from the past, then they're being run by the past. And there's no room for will in that. And of course, you know, the non-being mind, the ego mind, has a cheap copy of everything real in the spiritual dimension. And the cheap copy is willpower. I'm going to force this. I'm going to make this happen. But will is not about forcing or making things happen. It's about taking charge of one's own mind through that faculty and directing the mind in its activity. So there's several things that will can do. We go over this in the Getting the Stress You Need workshop. Will can frame a goal. Will can set a goal. Will can cancel a goal. Will can select the goal for immediate attention. Will can maintain a goal. Unless the mind that is being directed by that will is broken. There are several things that can damage that mind. You know, it's really crazy. You know, some of the biggest opponents of pot in the political system are now the people that are profiting from the sale of pot. They've got huge corporations going, and they're making millions upon millions. And one of the things that pot does is it destroys the part of the brain that will uses to maintain a goal. You know, think about your pothead. What are they? You give them a list of five things and say, would you get these five done? And they get halfway to getting the first, to where the first one is located to be done, and they don't remember what that was, and they don't remember the other five either. You know, it's like there was a professor that did some research on pot. And what they came up with in the laboratory was that there were two major effects of pot. One was that it destroyed memory, and the second one, he couldn't remember. He forgot. Excuse me, I couldn't resist that. But I think it's really tragic now. You know, pot's out there, and everybody's like, oh, well, it's a soft drug. It never hurt anybody. Oh, you better look at the research. The brain damage that's done by pot is horrendous. And the major reason is because the THC molecule just happens to be the right shape to fit into the cell membranes where nutrients enter the cell and wastes exit the cell. And that THC molecule, and I don't know whose numbers are accurate, but somewhere between 8 days and 8 months, that THC molecule is locked into that cell. Now, it has an impact throughout the whole structure, but in particular in the brain cell, this is destructive because it's blocking nutrition getting into the cell, and it's locking wastes into the cell. So you listen to the pothead, and what's the conversation go like? Well, you know, it's really just pretty cool. And yeah, I was going to say something, but let me think now. Anyway, it's cool. Doesn't really matter. And you know, kids especially are being taught, oh well, you know, this is just a happy thing to do. Now, have a mind that functions on full nutrition and full activity, and you're going to have a mind that's capable of happiness. Otherwise, a mind that is anesthetized and drugged thinks it's happy. But anesthetizing against pain is not happiness. Relative to being, you know, totally inundated and feeling every bit of pain in your structure, hey, it's pretty cool. I'm not saying there aren't medical uses for it, you know. People who have cancer have trouble eating. Hey, smoke all the pot you need to. If your cancer's going to kill you in a year, you know, eat and enjoy it. But feeding it to young kids, undeveloped brains, it's a tragedy. More and more and more states are going, yay, hey, this is another revenue source. Something to think about. Goals become a big key. And so the next several variations with suffixes and prefixes speak of will and the control and the function of will. Snay. Nasty sounding word. And it really comes down to hate or viciousness, usually in the human realm. It may also appear as a mind structure underlying the attitudes and behavior we describe as destructive. Hatred is usually of human beings. So snae-uta, we add that suffix we talked about earlier, and someone's being controlled from the unconscious part of their minds by this vicious, hateful part or set of brain cells. Ta is a suffix that you add, and it indicates a neural structure in the mind, a literal, we could call an entity of the mind, being lifted in function from silent or unconscious, latent, to where it's active. And you'll see the note, again, on page 95, a little better than halfway down the page, appears as E-Y-A in Tuvehun. You look at that word Tuvehun, and if you remember when we talked about the Beatitudes, it's a three-part word, Tuvehun. And so what that word speaks of is a latent neural structure. That's the E-Y part. Tuv is an attitude of mind or a neural structure. So a neural structure that's implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, a neural structure that is unconscious or unavailable, it's latent. And then you go into the Beatitudes, and the Beatitudes tell you how to activate it. Find me that in neuropsychology or neuropsychiatry somewhere today. Not going to find it. But it was known 2,000 years ago. Talan is to let, to allow. And if we move on down, Tashlim, to fulfill. Tavata, heavenly words, acts or deeds, as indicated by subject. So when one has a mind that's guided by active present love, then this would be an idea that applies. And the result of that in Matthew 12:34-35, it speaks of heavenly words, so the expression of words that are based in love. And if we head over to page 96, top of the page, Tagore. Commit adultery. Well, the number of lawful wives was unrestricted in Galilee at the time of Yeshua. Intercourse outside of wedlock, for male or female, was called tagor. It was a breaking of the law. So, adultery. The prefix T-I or T-I-T spoke of or indicated that it implied a second person. So we're talking to or of someone else. And we go down to Rachma again. We see Rachma with this second person imperative. And so it appears that this energy, when it is moving within a human being, when this gateway called Rachma and Kuba are open, that that energy reaches out, that energy expresses in being available to or touching another. And we go on down through the list, and it all refers back to things we've pretty much already talked about. Let's head over to page 97 in the dictionary. Two, here's that neural structure, an attitude of mind. So a two, and what we're looking to understand is, a la Aramaic, is that the mind presents these perceptual constructs. And you remember way back when we talked about the light in the mind, and that your active tooth, the active neural structure in you, is supposed to be a light in the world, a light for your earthly life. So each tooth, each neural structure that you have that's available to become active, you want to make sure, pardon me, that it's based in active present love. And when based in active present love, then your path through life is lighted. And then you'll remember, this, we spent quite a bit of time on this back in the beginning of the study. You remember we talked about perception, the constructs from carbon-based memory are designed to be the light for your earthly life. They're designed to give you information relative to yourself and your goals, that information which would carry your life forward into the actual world as it is. And if hostility or fear is active, then rather than a light for your earthly life, it becomes darkness. Now, that seems like a conflicting idea. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Well, how can light become darkness? But in that particular passage, they're saying if the guide for you, so perception based in love is the light for your earthly life, the guide for your earthly life. It keeps your mind on track. If the light, the guide you follow, is darkness, that is any form of hostility or fear, then how deep will your darkness become? Everything to do produced by the human mind that is based in hostility or fear is darkness. And it will always lead you to a sorrowful place. And so if you have the privilege of interacting with someone and they resonate your hidden darkness, remember being asked by a woman who considered herself to be very religious. She was a professional, actually, quite a successful professional. And she saw herself as being quite religious and pious. And so she asked me, you know, she's like, I don't know what's going on. Why sometimes do I just go into these fits of rage? I don't know. I don't understand. I have Jesus and I'm, you know, I'm religious. I go to church all the time. Why do I have this? And so I explained, it's because they're the energetic patterns within her mind. They are tubes. They are constructs in their mind that need to be cleaned out. And she was just like, no, that can't be. That can't be true of me because I have Jesus and, you know, I got my life together. And it's like, well, okay. So you think that your mind goes into a rage because of something outside of you. Well, that's just pure, you know, straight up denial. And the problem with going into denial is that one who lives there, no, this isn't about me. Let me explain to you how it's about somebody else. Well, that's being trapped in Satan. Remember Satan, the resistor, one who misleads, you think, in the mind of man, rather than connected to the actuality? Until I can own that this is mine because it's moving in me, and what's moving in me is moving in me because it's in me. If I can't own that, I can never undo it because I'll have to keep it hidden from myself. So it becomes a real key there. So this idea of tuv is a neural structure within the mind that is of heavenly dignity and function, connected to love. A neural structure decided by the Creator for all human minds, and one which makes available thoughts and actions in conformity of the will of the Creator called love. And when it's active, it will increase, it will guide you to behaviors and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. So again, and we've repeated this Tuvehun, many times, God implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. And then there's several different forms of that word, Tuv. Gives you a broader sense of what that idea is. It's the heavenly, what people refer to as heavenly, those things connected to love, a heavenly attitude, an upliftment, better, a sense of right, good. Tebuta, judgment or action. So actually, when one is open to this neural structure based in love being active, then the resultant condition is that of a higher state of function and a higher ability to process those things that have been hidden within that are based in hostility or fear. That's interesting. I'm not sure why I'm just seeing that Tuvehun is in this dictionary twice. Defined. I'll have to change, edit that. And so if we move on down the list, we're heading toward the bottom of page 97. Yadi is to know, to comprehend, to understand. And several variations on that. It's interesting, this word Vanvedi. Take the 8th word up. I don't proclaim to have anything that resembles great Aramaic diction, let's say. But it's prophets. When they speak of the law, when Yeshua speaks of that, he speaks as though the prophets are a possession of or an expression of the law. When they say, ask Yeshua what's most important in the law and the way things work as human beings, what's most important? You keep Rachma active so love is present in you. And then he says, for upon this hangs the law, a condition of Rachma active in the mind and its prophets. In other words, if you have that condition active in you, then you will step into the arena of what were called the prophets. And that doesn't mean people who sit around seeing the future. It's those who are able to attune to and connect to and have a comprehension of the actuality of how the energy field is working, what's actually going on in it. Yod, the smallest letter in the alphabet. That's one of those that, you know, they said, no, not one jot or tittle will be changed. They're the smallest letters. Yopani, recital, learning, the delivery of wisdom, being able to speak from that connected space of active love. And then over to page 98, last page of the dictionary, Zadik. So the key in this one is that we've got a neural structure, we've got an entity of mind that's active that is in integrity. This would be a source from the Beatitude we talked about, just and fair behavior. This would be where it would be connected. So in the text, it's rendered as holy or righteous, which, of course, includes integrity, but it's not the kind of piety, pious sort of righteousness. It's actually being connected to the energy system and knowing what's in harmony with right action, and then having the neural structures to support you in doing it. One who is engaged, kudsha, remember, ruka de kudsha, that which is proper for humans, engage in the energies proper for humans. So it's a whole, refers to a whole group of neurostructures, those things in the mind that support the attitudes and behaviors which people would call holy and righteous, not pious, but actually coming from and expressing in a way that supports the whole of life. And then the next few through Matthew gives you different variations on the theme of that word. Theonoita, wantonness in women, harlotry. And again, a couple of examples of that. And Zirta, the dash or scratch of a pen. I'm actually not even sure where that one applies, but that kind of covers our dictionary. And, you know, when we start out with the text, it just seemed to go through the dictionary and do some of the basic thoughts would be useful to do the rest of the text. So let's see who's on the call. See who's calling in.
I believe it's Rome. 903, you're on the air.
Hey,
greetings.
Welcome.
How are you all?
We're
I'm
rocking.
Doing well.
Doing well.
Awesome. I calling in today. Well, I have a couple things I'd like to get your idea about regarding this process. Now, I will say I have yet to do one worksheet, print one out, and I haven't done it yet. I've really just been taking things in and trying to be mindful of the things that I'm hearing. You know, just I guess taking this in. And I was wondering in regards to some things that I've kind of noticed about myself. I see some barriers. I mean, it's obviously I don't see it as, you know, impossible by any means, but I see some challenges that I feel are you know, come from somewhere. And the first of the two that I want to bring up is I think I have a tendency to be on the perfectionism side of things, which is kind of ironic because I don't really see anything that looks all that perfect in my life. But that also could be, you know, just perception. What are your thoughts on...
Did you have a power person?
Oh, absolutely.
Did you have a power person that required perfection from you? Was always wanting...
Yeah, never good enough. Yeah, so, I mean, I
recognize
that. How
did you like that when that was played out with you?
Well, you know, it started when I was young, as it probably did with a lot of people. And I would imagine I didn't like it too much, but the thing is when you're young, you don't know any different. So I feel that that's kind of played into life for me. And as I'm seeing it, the way I even look at not everyone, but just, I don't know, the closest people to me. You know,
right.
Like, I guess you'd say my goals or plans for them. And I just look at things as like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I feel like I might be a little hardcore when it comes to things. And it's just, you know, I don't know. I think that's what it is, a sense of perfectionism or always striving. Not doing anything because you don't feel that you can do it right.
You know, it might be valuable to look into the codependence workshop that we do. And in codependence, we describe what we call a power person. And that in order for someone to be a power person in our lives and... Pardon me. There's a tendency for us to have more than one power person. Three things have to occur, and it usually happens between a parent and a child, and that's what establishes that power person dynamic. And that is that the power person has more power over the child than, of course, the child does. The power person is not functioning out of love, and the child perceives the situation as survival. When those three things occur, the energy field of the child opens wide, and whatever energetic dynamics are happening in the field, even things that aren't spoken, even if it's just emotional or thoughts, those energetic patterns are absorbed by the child. In the future, that person who's had the power person dynamic instilled in their minds will literally only have three behaviors available to them, three options for behaving, and they'll all relate back to the power person. The behavior that the mind will automatically select for that individual that has a power person dynamic in their minds will be determined by the level of stress they're under. When there's little or no stress, a person will tend to do, just the automatic decision system kicks in, and they'll tend to do whatever their power person, whatever they did to get along with their power person. When stress starts to build, they'll flip out of that behavior and they'll go into doing whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, they'll tend to do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. So my offering is, the sense I get and what I'm hearing you say is, that your power person isn't around to do it to you, so you're doing it to yourself. And that would be, my offering would be, that would be the place to start to do your forgiveness work, especially hearing that you have that little voice in the background, because if you don't resolve your power person dynamics, then you will end up being the power person for that little one. One who, as a parent, is able to continuously maintain a state of active love, never has to impose that power person dynamic upon their child. But when stress builds, most people start defaulting back to the power person dynamic unless they've gone back in and done the forgiveness work of removing it. And that's where I'd suggest the worksheet comes in. And, you know, even easier perhaps than printing them and doing them, if you go to your app store on your phone and you just type in Heartland as one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, in your app store, that will bring up the Heartland Forgiveness app. There's a red glowing heart. There are a few apps that will come up when you type that in. And there's a red glowing heart. And you can do the worksheet process right there on the app. And so, you know, you carry it within your phone wherever you are. You got a minute. You can sit down and do a worksheet. So that might be another option other than printing it and writing it. But I'd suggest digging in. I
downloaded the app. I just have yet to do it. You know, I'm thinking, I wanted the first one to be on the paper. Got, like, a nice fancy piece of paper just to, like, you know, be a token of, like, me starting to really do some deep diving and work in my life. You know, I was thinking, like, why haven't I done this yet? And I'm like, well, maybe it's because I'm waiting for everything to be just right. Which it never will
be. So here's my input. Here's my input. One of the things is that sometimes people will sit down and take 2 hours to do a worksheet. So if you're thinking, I need this whole bundle of time, one of the practices we've recommended, and we've done this because we've had it shared with us, that you can do a worksheet, give yourself about 3 minutes, and just go through the steps of the worksheet and start to develop the brain cells and the habit of utilizing that tool. And then, yes, if you go into deeper dynamics, it might take a little longer, but it doesn't have to be a big, long ordeal. And one of the things that I've observed over the years is that, or at least, pardon me, I should say the conclusions that I've come to, is that the reason people don't do it is because there's a part of them that knows that they're going to have to start to face some things that they haven't wanted to face. And I just encourage you to go for it, stand in willingness, and know that whatever needs to come up will come up, and you can work through it.
Okay. Before I bring up the second thing, could you go back to point two of, you said there's typically three modes that a person with a power dynamic person has. I didn't quite grasp the second of the three.
Okay. So the power person has more power over the child. Again, it's usually a parent and child, not necessarily. Has more power over the child than the child has. The second thing is they're not functioning out of love. They're functioning out of some form of hostility or fear.
Okay.
And then the third thing, the child perceives that, oh, my God, you know, this is, if I don't eat, if I don't keep this person happy, you know, whatever the dynamics are. So when those three things happen, when you think of this body-mind unit as an energy field, that's when the child's field just opens wide, and they become like a sponge. Any energy that's in the field is just drawn into the structure and becomes part of this power person dynamic. And my take is, if you look around the world, if you were to be able to talk to, I don't care whether it's the president of the United States or it's a congressperson or, you know, a bum on the street, what's running their lives is this power person dynamic. Literally,
sorry to
runs
interrupt
the world.
You. That's
okay.
What I was referring to is the modes that we operate out of. One, you're saying, like, when everything's fine, you just kind of, like, do what you just do. Second, I
right.
didn't quite
get along with that.
Wrap my mind. And the third is, like, you know, you become the power person.
Right. So the second one is, let's use an example. So let's say that I'm Mr. An example I usually use. I'm Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. So I get along with my power person, you know, everything is rocking and everybody thinks I'm really wonderful and nice and sweet, and I am. And then when stress starts to build, there'll be a personality shift. This is sometimes referred to as multiple personality. And not only does a personality shift, but there are actual measurable chemical changes in the body, physiology shifts, along with this mind energy shift that occurs. And so this often happens in relationships. Two people have been together for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and, you know, things are wonderful. And one day, now that, you know, there are two babies and their bills due and blah, 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 the stress is building, all of a sudden, you know, these two people have been interacting for, let's say, 5 years together, and it's always been Mr. Nice Guy. And now the stress hits, and what happened with the power person under extreme levels of stress was that one became, in order to protect themselves, became Mr. Snarky. So all of a sudden there's a personality shift, and it's like, who are you? I've never seen you before. And it might be years before that pops its head up, before there's enough stress for that behavior to come forward.
Okay.
And then if one becomes ultra-stressed, and maybe, you know, what the power person did that I hated the most was use their fists on me. So all of a sudden, Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy becomes Mr. or Ms. Snarky, and all of a sudden they're slapping people around when they get to that ultra-stressed state.
Okay. I understand. Thank you for explaining that. And the last thing, so I can, I guess, knock this out and let you get back and close. I feel that I have a relatively low emotional intelligence, and this is a concern for me when it comes to doing the worksheets and doing other things. I think now I'm at a state to where I'm more aware than I've ever been of emotions,
right.
But I think I'll probably struggle a little bit when it comes to, like, identifying things, because I honestly don't think, I feel that for whatever reason, self-preservation, whatever, it's just like there's been a lot of things suppressed to where it's like things are there, but I don't even think I can put, like, it's disassociated in the sense that there's a feeling that I don't
identify,
know what to call this. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how that's going to play out when it comes time to, you know, having to identify these things. Oh, what are you feeling? I don't know. Like, I've always hated, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? You know, it's like, I don't know. I think I'm, like, really underselling myself right now, but I'm just used to coping. So how do you think that'll, or what do I need to look at when doing these worksheets and trying to get the most out of them? And that's my last question.
All right. So I'm not sure I quite understood the question, but just let me throw another thought in before I ask for clarity on it. So in interaction with your power person, did they ever give you messages about what your capabilities were?
I'm sure they did. Yes.
Usually the early messages from a power person are things like, you're broken. There's something wrong with you. There's something deficient about you. And so if their message is that you've received, then I'd suggest maybe some of your early worksheets might be on your power person around that dynamic so that you can uncover and let go of that thought that somehow you're deficient, because the truth is each one of us is a genius in our being. And it's the mind that interferes with that. And as you start to let that go, the interference of the mind gets out of the way, and all of a sudden your true genius shows up. And everybody has that.
Maybe I could word it this way, and I'm sure, like, what you said still applies. Try to make it more simple. I don't know that I can identify, like, some feelings and, like, sadness, per se. Like, I've come to realize that recently I've been depressed a lot throughout the years, but didn't even know that it was depression.
Right.
Like, I mean, I came from a family that's like, oh, you know, like, I mean, we didn't really acknowledge a whole lot, like, of emotion. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, there's love there, but it was not warm, tender love. It was hard, you know, so...
Yeah.
What
right.
I'm getting at is I'm not so in touch with my inner self, and I'm not sure what that will look like when it comes to doing the worksheets and, you know, writing down the emotions when I don't even know what I'm feeling a lot of times. You know, I just do.
And you know, when you do that worksheet, it's perfectly fine to just put a question mark in around the emotions if you're not sure what it is.
Okay.
Okay. You know, just you don't. In order for the forgiveness process to be effective, you don't have to do every step of the process perfectly.
Okay.
We've actually got a short form, 3-step process. I identify the situation. I look at what my, or actually 4-step. Identify the situation. I look at the goal that I'm holding here. I cancel the goal and I ask Rick for support. It can be as short as that.
Okay.
And that can move a ton of energy. So you don't, you know, I'd let go of, and maybe it's time to just become a retired perfectionist. And you don't have to do every step perfectly in order for the forgiveness process to be extremely effective.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. Cool. Sweet. Well, delight to hear that little voice in the background. And
thank
holding
you.
The space for your first worksheet.
Yes.
Hi, Rome.
Thank you all
appreciate
so much.
It.
You all have a wonderful day.
All right. And as questions come up, please feel comfortable. Shout and ask. We're here to support
thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Well, everybody, thank
right.
you
for bye
joining
for
us. Okay. Take care. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And blessings.